You're listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center for Global Policy in Beijing. I'm Paul Hanley, the director of the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, and I'll be your host today. I'm delighted to be joined by my friend Dr. Xie Tao, a full professor of political science at Beijing Foreign Studies University, where we are conducting the interview today. On the beautiful campus here at Beihai, as they call it in China, in Chinese. Dr. Xie Tao has a PhD from Northwestern University, and he is an expert in U.S.-China relations. Xie Tao, we're thrilled you're here with us today to discuss Obama's recent trip to Asia, tensions over the territorial disputes in South China Sea, and China's foreign policy under the new leadership. Thank you for joining us.
Well, my pleasure.
President Obama took a trip to Asia recently, as you know. U.S. officials have stressed prior to the trip that the visit and the broader U.S. rebalancing policy to Asia are not aimed at containing China or trying to keep China down. Rather, the rebalancing policy is an effort to expand U.S. economic, diplomatic, trade, defense, and security engagement with the most dynamic region of the world, a policy which welcomes China's peaceful rise and positive sum cooperation. Yet in China, most seem unconvinced. How, in your view, has President Obama's recent trip to Asia been received here in China?
Well, you got it right. I think, you know, you ask most Chinese officials and policymakers and analysts, they would say no. We're not convinced about your benign intention in this area. One example is that, you know, look at, you know, President Barack Obama's statements on Diaoyu Islands. You know, at least I know that this has been a long-standing U.S. policy. The United States does not take position on sovereignty. The United States only insists on peaceful solution, right, to any of the disputes. But Chinese government would view that statement as an implicit endorsement or emboldening the Japanese. Another sign, when President Barack Obama was in the Philippines and the United States and the Philippines agreed to upgrade a little bit their defense treaty, and Chinese scholars view that as another unfriendly sign. So I think, you know, regardless what are the reassurances from the State Department or President Barack Obama, the damage is down. I would use that word. The damage was down.
Mm. Okay. Now you talk about U.S. approach to the region. The Chinese leadership seems to be taking a new approach to China's neighborhood diplomacy. Chinese new leaders embarked last fall on a diplomatic and economic charm offensive that included trips by the leadership to Central Asia, also to Southeast Asia, in an effort to create a more welcoming peripheral environment. But many outside of China also see China as having taken steps that have caused anxiety and uncertainty in the Asia-Pacific region, and heighten the risks surrounding regional security flashpoints. For example, the sudden surprise announcement of the Chinese Air Defense Identification Zone, the East China Sea Air Defense Identification Zone, or the blocking of the Philippines' ships to the Second Thomas Shoal. Some also see differences in how China has treated certain countries in its neighborhood. Can you give our listeners a sense of your view of China's new diplomacy to the periphery, and how the recent behavior, both the charm offensive, but also the mixed steps surrounding territorial disputes, can be understood?
Well, this is you know, excellent question. I think that this is a puzzle to me. I think, you know, to many observers too. It's like, you know, one step forward and two steps back, right? Like you mentioned, last year, you know, President Xi Jinping proposed the 21st century maritime Silk Road.
Right.
And when he was in Central Asia, you know, he proposed to build up the Silk Road economic belt to integrate Central Asia. So this North strategy and South strategy, that was obviously aimed to pacify China's neighbors, to bring them more, you know, on board with China's foreign policy.
But convince them that China's rise was good for them.
Yeah, that was good for them. It's a win-win situation, right? And then you mentioned, like, you know, the rising tensions in the South China Sea. So there's really a puzzle. And besides, remember, early this year, the leadership convened a high-profile conference on China's periphery diplomacy.
Right.
And so on the one hand, so you have all these signs that leadership is wanting to really make the relationship better On the other hand, you do see the troubling signs in South Tennessee, in Japan. So how do you explain this? You know, my theory on this is that we do mean to cultivate better relationship with those countries. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we do need to have these foreign policy crises to discipline the Chinese military. The military, I think, President Xi Jinping, I would say, he's perhaps creating these crises to tell his top brass, like, are you ready to fight a war? Mm-hmm. And if the brass says no, we're not. And why you are not? Because many of us have been corrupted. We have not really get into any serious training. And then President Xi Jinping would have said, okay, if you guys are not ready, we're going to clean the army, clean the navy, the air force. So I think, you know, my theory is that, you know, by doing this, we give people the impression that we are really nationalistic. We want to fight a war. Mm-hmm. But down, I think in the bottom of the heart, they are actually using this to clean up the military. Right. One example is this high-profile investigation of the two-star general. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that makes sense to you, mm-hmm. but I think, mm-hmm. you know, this kind of crisis is they must have a domestic logic there.
Very interesting. Okay. Let's talk for a second about mm-hmm. the ongoing confrontation right now in the South China Sea near the Paracel Islands. Since China's state-owned Sinuk, a China National
Offshore Oil Company.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Moved its deep sea drilling oil rig to a disputed area to the northwest of the islands. The oil rig's timing seems perplexing given it follows immediately after President Obama's trip to the region and it happened just before the ASEAN summit in Myanmar and in the midst of China's efforts to create a more friendly environment, which we've discussed. Can you give us a sense of the rationale and the broader context behind the decision to move the oil rig to this disputed territory? And was it coordinated by the government? What was the intention of that? And how do you explain the timing?
Well, two possible scenarios. One, this was premeditated, like you said, and organized by the Chinese government because there were so many ships involved. Second scenario is that this was just a, you know, single-minded pursuit by Sinuk, an oil company. But I'm inclined to believe that the government must have been involved somewhere in this. Otherwise, how could you get like 40 ships? And they seem to be very well prepared, you know, for confrontation with the Vietnamese. And they are equipped with water cannons, you know. Mm. How many fishing ships are equipped with water cannons?
Yeah.
Right? So I think there must be a reason. And then you said, you know, this was just on the heels of President Barack Obama's visit to Southeast Asia.
Right.
But you see, Vietnam was not on President Barack Obama's list.
Right.
And so I think, you know, some speculation is that China wants to test the bottom line for U.S. commitment to Vietnam. And so I think the logic is like this. If Vietnam is not on the list of President Barack Obama's visit, does that mean the United States is not sufficiently committed to Vietnam? Mm. Well, when I was in Washington, D.C., when I talked to U.S. officials, they would say in a very unequivocal way, it would be a terrible mistake to assume that any country that is not on the list of President Barack Obama's visit would not be within the purview of U.S. defense concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in the past, China has elected to shelve territorial disputes and pursue joint development in order to focus on its own economic development. It seems China recently has discarded this approach and is less interested in biding its time or hiding its capabilities. Has China approached here changed? And if so, why? And what can be done to de-escalate the situation in the South China Sea and repair relations with Vietnam, a country that China has historically had good relations with?
Well, first about whether China has changed its approach, I would say China has not. Why? Because Deng Xiaoping said, you know, put away the disputes, let's focus on joint development. But there's another phrase, which is almost always neglected by journalists. That is, China has sovereignty over those islands. Mm. So Deng Xiaoping says, okay, as long as you recognize that China has sovereignty over those islands, and then we can go along with this, shelving the disputes and joint development. But how, you know, that's a paradox there. You know, how can you pursue this, right? And then why do I say China has not changed? Because in the 1970s and 1980s, number one, there wasn't much development in those sea air waters. Second, in 1970s and 1980s, and even up to 1990s, neither the Japanese or the Philippines actually actively challenged China's position. So I would say on the one hand, there was more assertiveness on the Japanese and the Filipino side. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there was also a perceptible Chinese assertiveness, and presumably because of China's growing power and growing public awareness and also growing public pressure on Chinese leadership. And second, you know, how do we de-escalate this tension? I think it's going to be very hard. And now if my theory about, you know, domestic politics, you know, cleaning up the military is correct, I would say probably within a year or so, after the trial and sentence of that two-star general, plus probably more coming, and then within the 2 or 3 years when President Xi Jinping is firmly in control and has is of the military, plus he has achieved his goal of really modernizing the Chinese military into a professional one, and then maybe at that point you would still see a de-escalation. But then, by that point, the Chinese military would be really in a position to fight a war.
Well, I've taken a lot of your time today, and I want to thank you for your insights. It's been fascinating. Thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure, you know,
podcast.
Always.
That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua Podcast. If you'd like to read or learn more about U.S.-China relations and the security challenges in the Asia-Pacific, you can find more articles, events, and podcasts on our website at www.carnegietsinghua.org. I encourage you to visit and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in next time.